Thanks for joining us here on Service to School Stories. Your hosts for this season are Alec Emmert, Service to School CEO and Navy veteran.
And Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer and former College Admissions Officer. This season, we'll cover topics as it relates to higher education, military service transition, and career opportunities and outcomes for veterans. Join us as we share student stories, inside tips from the admissions office, and conversations with employers actively hiring student veterans. Here we go.
I am very excited to welcome Nafiz Amin, Lindy Crisman, and Nick Mays to the podcast. We're going to be talking about every grad school student's favorite topic, which is test prep. I'm very lucky to have met Nafiz back in 2016 when I first began my MBA journey. He was leading what is now known as Smart with a Heart, but was then Sherpa Prep. Actually, Nafiz, you can probably correct me because Sherpa Prep is still around, but the earlier incarnation of Smart with a Heart when I was doing my GMAT prep. And did a little research online as to the best GMAT prep in the DC area. They came up time and time again. So I went with them over some of the bigger names like the Manhattan Preps, the Kaplans, et cetera. And I did not regret that one bit. Nafiz was the absolute goat of test prep. And to give you a little perspective and to give some of your listeners or our listeners rather, who may be doubting themselves, some self-confidence, I had a very, very mediocre GPA as an English major at the Naval Academy. Through Nafiz's guidance, he gave me a very, very high GMAT score that was able to get me into Wharton. So for that, I am internally grateful. So no matter who you are, if you're listening to it, listening to this podcast, get in touch with Nafiz. He can do some miracles. So that's my quick intro here. And I'll actually, since I've been talking about you so much, Nafiz, I'll turn it over to you and we can do a round of intros.
Thank you, Alec. I really appreciate this opportunity. So Sherpa Prep has been around since 06. We've been doing GMAT and GRE prep since then. And we've been honored to serve tens of thousands of people. Smart of the Heart is our nonprofit arm designed to widen the funnel even further to help more communities get into graduate school, have the opportunity to change their lives. Certainly, the military is a huge part of our mission. Thank you for all the kind words, man. I mean, honestly, I'm just the coach. You did the work here. So I'm honored to have Nick Mains and Lindsay Crisman here with us. They're two of our board members. Smart with the Heart is completely run by alums of Sherpa Prep. I'm a co-founder, but I have no say. So I'll let Nick and Lindsay take it from here.
Go for Lindsay.
Thanks, Nick. Thinking back to my journey, I guess starting back college, I went to West Point. I graduated in 2014. Had a decent GPA, not anything stellar. Branched aviation. I flew Apaches for about 3 years. I was out of Fort Bliss, and then I assessed for the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. Where I became the first female in Army aviation history to pilot the AH-6 Little Bird. I was so involved with the military and I love my career flying that I really hadn't put much thought into any test prep. I kind of just made the decision on a whim, I'm going to study for the GRE. I'm going to apply to grad schools and I'm going to separate from the military. Unbeknownst to me, it actually takes a lot of time to dedicate it to getting yourself prepared academically to take that test, whether it's the GRE or the GMAT. I was still working with the 160th, so I was, going on rotations and deployments and training iterations. So my time was, it was busy. Times were like really busy. I had a really hard time finding an adequate amount of time to sit down in front of a tutor or the computer books to prepare for the test. So one thing that I ended up doing was I thought if I just spend the most money, I'll get the best test prep out there, and hired a personal tutor and paid a ton of money. And I got essentially nothing out of it. It wasn't geared towards my needs. It wasn't geared towards, how much I was still working. And so I kind of just wasted a bunch of money on something that didn't give me the results that I needed. So then I got really lucky, and actually through services school, I found Sherpa Prep. And I got the discount that was associated with it. I think it was like half off the time, and it was a wonderful, test prep program for the GRE. I mean, it brought my score up to exactly where I needed it to be, and ended up getting into Harvard Business School. So that's where I'll be starting in a couple of days, actually. And that's kind of just like a very general background story of my test prep journey.
Very cool.
Similar story to Lindsay, West Point 2015. I had an extremely low GPA, so I never thought grad school was actually in the picture. I went and took a shot at the GRE first, actually, in 2019, just cold, completely bombed it. Was very fortunate that I ran into a Wharton Navy vet, actually, who told me that he was friends with Nafis, put me on a Sherpa Prep. Through Sherpa Prep, I was their last in-person class before they switched to virtual during COVID. Similar story to you, Alec. Nafis turned my entire test prep game around. I was able to get a pretty decent score, which enabled me with my, like I said, extremely low GPA to get on going to Berkeley. And then now I'm on my way to Harvard Kennedy School. So that test score really was like revolutionized like my trajectory of where it could have gone. Cause I took a JMO job straight out of the military, worked there for about 6 months. And I was like, oh no, this is not it for me right now. I really want to go to school. So yeah, really thankful to Sherpa Prep, and I'm glad I could help out with Smart with the Heart.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that like, these are just the three of our stories are kind of a drop in the bucket of the number of veterans that this organization has transformed, because the way I think about it is, a lot of us are academy grads. Those are funny institutions, right? And it's a 4 years snapshot. That was a number of years ago, where we're all going through a lot, inside and outside of the classroom, with our military training and other pressures we're going through. So there was a lot of growth that happens within the military. And you typically are a very different person when you've graduated from the academy or 5 years after your military service and you were there. So having the opportunity to get a second shot at showing schools your potential and capabilities through a test is a tremendous benefit. And having a coach out there who can really help you with that, like Nafis, is such a great asset. So just quick plug there for fellow vets. Don't let an a less than spectacular undergraduate GPA get you down. Many of us struggle while we're going through our commissioning programs and have gone on to do great things. So, but with that, I'd like to just take a quick pause and reset to talk about the GMAT versus the GRE, and how Sherpa Prep and Smart with a Heart work together, because we've been throwing out a lot of different acronyms here, GMAT, GRE, and then the Sherpa Prep versus the Smart with a Heart. And if you can kind of break all those down for our listeners.
Yeah, I'd love to. So Sherpa Prep offers live instruction courses for the GMAT and the GRE year round. We have instructors pretty much every day of the week teaching the GMAT or the GRE, save Friday, because no one wants to study for standardized tests on Friday. Frankly, no one wants to study any day, but Friday definitely not. Smart with the Heart is our nonprofit arm. We figured, honestly, having met so many thousands of people, even with our lower price point, our purposely intentionally lower price point with Sherpa Prep, we've always been mission driven. Frankly, our model has always been to out-deliver the competition by 2x or 3x, and that's the truth, and price at half to make our value proposition even more attractive. But to be honest with you, the biggest price point in running a test prep company is the instructor. Having a ridiculously talented instructor is very hard to get, especially to our standards. All of our instructors at the moment have 10 plus years teaching experience, plus like perfect test scores. So the price point's always been talent, recruitment, and even when you get a really smart person, the chance of they're a good instructor is not that high. We met so many people who are professors at universities because we pay pretty well, and they can't teach. They just simply can't teach. So when we find someone, we keep them, for sure. But the thing is, if you keep them, if you pay them the way they should be paid, test prep gets very unaffordable for most people. And it's sad. It's really sad. I think the economic realities are perverse, that we make education a luxury good. So Jay Friedman, my co-founder, and I decided, let's see what we can do about this. Let's try to change the economic model on its head by recording our instruction in video format, hours and hours of lectures. Let's do that. And then the personal touch that really is important, the whole reason that you know, frankly, our board even takes our phone calls, because we made a relationship with them. And we need to have human interventions. So what we did was have the majority of the course done through asynchronous recordings, but there's live office hours and human intervention whenever the student needs. So that reduces the price point quite a bit. And our idea through this charitable arm is to have a private corporation fund help us fund the difference, so we allow more people to get into school. It's unique for sure. We're optimistic it'll work, but honestly, I was just frustrated by that, like so many people at information sessions just being priced out, thinking they don't have a chance. Even you know the stories you tell about the GPAs, but even beyond that, even if you know the GPAs are fine, they still think it's not for them. They're first generation. They have no one to model after. And then they look at the price point of MBA programs, a couple hundred thousand dollars plus lost income. They're like, I can't do this. We all know in this room that a lot more people can do it if they had a little bit of encouragement. So Smart of the Heart, we've released our GRE course. It's available. We launched it in May. And we've had, at this point, I think, 50 people go through the program already. Hopefully we can make that number to thousands. If we are able to fundraise, we hope to also produce a GMAT course soon, later this year, with the new format coming out. We've been delaying it. But at the moment, the GRE is a totally viable option for everyone, for all kinds of schools, public policy, law school, and certainly business school.
Gotcha. And so that our listeners understand, the course, the Smart with the Heart GRE course that they would take, it's a recorded course. They'll have access to those modules whenever they want. They can rewind them, go back, review lessons. And then if there's concepts they don't understand, like a couple times a week, they can reach out to a professor and go to office hours and get specific questions answered, correct?
Absolutely. And also one-on-one chats too, in addition to small group office hours.
Okay, that's fantastic. And they can access these recordings 24/7.
Yes. We built the curriculum having talked to a lot of students who are military or are deployed and not necessarily have great internet all the time. So the course was designed, honestly, with a lot of military folks in mind.
Now that's fantastic. And specifically, you're looking, the mission of Smart with a Heart is educational opportunity through test preparation for historically disadvantaged communities. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Our constituency groups are military transitioners, women, first gen students, and anyone who's under-resourced. We want to help anyone who wants to take a shot at this. I sincerely believe that the more people will have an opportunity, the better off society is for everyone.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, I guess, so what are some of the struggles and pitfalls you've seen that members of the communities that you're serving have, and how have you seen people successfully overcome them?
Well, there's a few, unfortunately. A lot of it's imposter syndrome. That's the one that is the most pervasive. People just don't think they can do it. If they can't model after anyone. They think it's for other people, not them. And that's pervasive, especially in under-resourced groups. We try to overcome that through a lot of programming, a lot of chats. We talk to all of our students, they tell them they can do it. But that's a tough mountain to climb, and we're doing our best. Another one that is problematic is, of course, not all education systems are the same. Not everyone has the same access or had the same access back in the day to the same materials and the same programming. And so our courses, Sherpa Prep, Smart the Heart, all of it, start people at the basics. We assume no pre-existing knowledge. And frankly, this is not a surprise to anyone. U.S. math education especially isn't terribly good, even at the fanciest schools, even at the most private schools. So there's a lot of things that we teach aren't known by most. So we started one off at the beginning to try to build a foundation. The third thing that I see is a pervasive problem for communities is that I think there's a lot of information asymmetry. A lot of people don't know the right answers to how to proceed in test prep, let alone admissions. And people are just relying on Reddit or their friend, and they're getting these anecdotal bits of knowledge, which unfortunately aren't always the most accurate or the best for the individual student. So there's a lot of groupthink that goes on. And oftentimes I spend a lot of my day just disabusing people of like the common knowledge, because the common knowledge actually isn't very good. And obviously we're pebbles throwing pebbles into the ocean here. We're a mom and pop shop. Hopefully that it gets bigger through the Smart with the Heart. But we have to spend a lot of time just helping people make better decisions by giving them better information.
Gotcha. And so I'll throw one just real pearl of wisdom you gave me, and then I'll turn it over to the other participants as well to see if there's some, because we all talk about the great wisdom Nafees has given us. So I'll give like one specific example, and while I'm talking, y'all can maybe think about something that he's shared. So in my case, it was in the GMAT. I know Smart with the Heart is GRE focused, but share the breakdown of the GMAT composite score, and it's biased towards a verbal. And for me, I'm not great with math. Even though I was a nuclear engineer in the Navy, math has never been my strong suit, but I've been pretty good with the verbal side of things. And so when he and I were working together, he said, you know, play to your strength. You're getting, you know, maybe five or six wrong in the verbal section, but you could come pretty close to batting 1,000 here. And that would get you, you know, instead of spending all this time trying to be okay at math, be better at math, just be fine with being okay at math and getting, you know, a mediocre math score, but just come pretty close to perfect in verbal because you have the capability of doing that. So where I was really focusing on my weaknesses during test prep, I ended up shifting that and focusing on my strengths and essentially being pretty close to perfect at something I was already good at. And that really kind of was the driving factor behind me getting the score I did, because I think I ended up only getting like one wrong on the verbal because I spent so much time studying it, which no one really does. But that was the insight that I got that I haven't heard or seen anywhere else, but that I was able to get from Nafees.
Yeah. I think I have a good one. For me, it was less, I'd already put in the work. It was now just me like living inside my head. And this is something that was like so personalized that we talk about with Smart with the Heart. We want to have those touch points and we can see their error logs and we know exactly like what they're dealing with. For me on test day, Nafees actually told me to like go to a bar before and have a mimosa to just relax and chill. Okay. Well, he's like, you've done the hours. And he's like, I've seen the work you put in. Like, he's like, just relax, just chill, like take a deep breath. And it was like a game changer for me. And that was just something about that personal touch. Like, it wasn't about the system or like me knowing how to do sentence correction. It was literally about me just like getting out of my own head. And that was something I really appreciated, which we're trying to replicate now with Smart with the Heart by having those check-ins and having the instructor actually have this relationship with the student. So, because not every student needs to work on geometry. That might not be their problem. It's a blanket answer. But for me, it was as simple as like, yeah, just go get a mimosa before, take a deep breath, you're going to be fine. And that was something that stuck with me when I think about it. Yeah, because that's the high touch that we aim for, Smart with the Heart, at least.
Did you get the mimosa?
Oh, yeah, I got the mimosa. I think I had two. Really let loose.
Before you, the GRE.
Yeah, we need a disclaimer here. This is a case-by-case basis. One, not many. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, it's true. You know, every student needs a different kind of prep. A different kind of pre-game ritual. And some people go in really tight, they've over-prepared, and yes, I will admit, that's what I told Nick.
I think one thing for me that I just distinctly remember was I'm kind of the person where I will, even the night before the test, still be going over my vocab cards and trying to rote memorize as much as I possibly can, all the formulas and everything. And I took it the first time, and obviously I didn't do very well. And then through all of the coaching and mentorship that I had from Nafees and Jay, I learned I should not do that the night before the test. I should let my brain relax. I should maybe drink a mimosa. I should find something else that distracts me from the stress and the thought of, okay, tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. or whatever time it was, I'm sitting down and I'm taking this 3.5-hour test. So being able to kind of separate yourself, I think, was something that was very important for me to hear. And I'm thankful so much for that advice. Even, I mean, it's applicable in so many things too, so.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I'll just ask Nafees. So, you know, a lot of our listeners have got the GRE versus GMAT question that comes up all the time. What are your thoughts on the different tests? Like, who should take which? Like, what are the, like, kind of like the key differences between the two of them, and why should one person take one over the other?
Oh, that's a great question. And everyone should be thinking about this. The answer, unfortunately, is specific to the individual, but I'll give some broad strokes here. The GMAT is the test designed for business school. They started this test in 1955. I might be off by a year, but mid-50s is when it started. And it was designed for a business school curriculum. And so for the last, you know, nearly 7 decades, schools know what it is. They know what it's about. They know the rigors of it. In recent years, to increase and widen the pool of applicants, and also, you know, to reduce the burden for people who might do dual degrees, maybe a JD MBA or MPP MBA or whatever, many schools, or actually almost all U.S. schools except the GRE now too. Now, the GRE is the utility test. It's for pretty much all kinds of grad school. Law schools take it now, business schools take it, and anything in the College of Arts and Sciences would take the GRE. The pool of people who take the GRE is different from the MBA, from the GMAT pool. And that causes a different kind of curve, a different kind of distribution, especially on the math side where people have more consternation. Because pretty much everyone in the College of Arts and Sciences takes the GRE to get into grad school, there are many students who take the GRE who don't study math at all because they don't need to. Their schools told them, like, it doesn't really matter. You're only required to do this because of a requirement for the entire university. But, you know, someone who's doing sculpture or, you know, art history, your math doesn't really, it's not going to make or break your application here. So the pool of people who are taking the GRE, they're not all spending a lot of time on math. Now, there are some people who take the GRE who have to spend an inordinate amount of time on that. The future economists amongst us, architects, they need to go near perfect on the GRE quant. So you get this different pools, which makes the percentiles on quant not equal. And, you know, going to information asymmetry, Alec, you were talking about, you know, leaning in on your verbal. A lot of people don't know the score breakdown on the GMAT. That is absolutely not common knowledge, that actually the GMAT gives a little bit more weight to verbal. But one thing that I often hear from students is like, oh, the GRE quant is easier. Maybe I should do that. Well, that's like half the answer, really. The quant is like 1 degree easier. The GRE quant is, let's say, a sports car with 5 gears. And the GMAT would be a 6-gear car. It does have a higher level. But it doesn't mean that that's you should go to the easier test on the math side. If you really want to compete against other people going to selective schools, you might want to compete on the test that has another gear. Especially if you have maybe some bad math grades when you're 19 years old or no math at all in your transcript, you know, you could really equalize. You can really take advantage of the GMAT giving you another opportunity. So as far as people deciding between the two tests, the first thing I tell people is like, take one of each. Just see how they feel. Don't let the numbers, you know, dictate too much. Just talk about feel right here. And then you want to compare the percentiles, but you want to give the GRE percentile like deflation. You want to like drop the GRE quad percentile by like 20 points or maybe even 25 percentile to make it equivalent to the GMAT. They're not apples to apples. As far as whether the individual student thereafter should choose the GRE or the GMAT, I think it goes to the like 70 or 75% application. That's not standardized testing. If you're doing incredibly well at your job, you have a great academic background, you have great recommendations, you have great extracurriculars, then, you know, we can maybe think about, you know, taking the GRE instead of the GMAT. If, however, I have a student who is maybe has a couple of like, not red flags, but yellow flags, I might lean GMAT. But it's a conversation now. Like, that's the thing. Honestly, it's got to be, to give a person good advice, you need to really know everything about what's going on. But it's the broad strokes are, you know, the GRE is easier, but that doesn't mean you should take it.
Something, okay. Alec, you mind if I caveat real quick? Something interesting that's occurred in the last couple of years is Army Captain's Career Course, our O3 leadership course, has started requiring the GRE. So we've seen a lot of, I think that was like 2 years ago. They take it at a CCC is what we call it. So that's somehow we've seen the Army officer population that are right around transitions time starting to lean into the GRE because it's mandated for them to take it with no prep involved at all. So it's an interesting thing going on the Army side. I don't know if it's happening on the Navy side yet.
Yeah, no, that has not crept its way into the But to your point, Nafis, there's a lot to unpack there. So for me, kind of the way I saw it, being transparent about my story is I was applying to business school when I was 34 years old. So, you know, age, business schools can't discriminate against you because of your age. But if you are an older applicant, there is a question as to why are you getting an MBA right now? And in my case, I had a reason, but when Nafis talks about flags, like that's a yellow flag. They're like, all right, we got someone who's a little older. You know, why is he applying here? Transparent about my fairly mediocre USNA GPA. And in an English major, not really the most rigorous major we had there either. So recognizing those kind of two yellow flags that Nafis talked about, I said, all right, so I got to make up for this in another way. The easiest way to do that is to knock the GMAT out of the park. Now, had I been in my mid-20s, a very solid military career, I had a solid military career, but had I just been coming on the tail of that, been kind of in that target age demographic with a higher GPA, I might have thought a little bit harder about the GRE because I wouldn't have had to compensate for as much. And so that was just my thinking as to why I went for GMAT and GRE over the GRE. And then one other point that I will share is for me, I worked in for a consulting firm before I joined services school, and I screened MBA applications. And one of the things that we did look at was the GMAT for an interview, and the GRE was more of an unknown quantity. So the GMAT was kind of viewed as, you know, if you saw, you know, mid 700 score, the that was viewed as a proxy for saying that person was pretty sharp. When we started seeing like the different GRE scores, you throw them into a GMAT converter and all that, but it was less of a deciding factor. So it kind of comes down to how well you think you would, in that case, we would start looking, leaning into other areas of that person's background. So if you think that, and from my experience or from what I saw, and it actually really echoes Nafis' point, if you think you've got something to compensate for, a really good way to do it is to knock the GMAT out of the park. If you've got a very strong profile and standardized tests might not necessarily be your thing, you still want to get a very solid GRE score, but it may be a better way to go. Nafis, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the GMAT is, you know, losing its grip on, you know, the monopoly, right, on especially MBA programs. The GRE has definitely made an incursion there, and more people are using the GRE. And I think the consultancies and the banks are also going to maybe reconsider how they look at the GRE in their onboarding. But I would say the GRE is certainly a path. Obviously, we wouldn't offer it if it weren't. It's just, I would say for the GRE, just if you're going to go use that for an MBA program, you know, hopefully at least most of the other things are on your application are taken care of in decent shape. And on a relative basis, you need to do a little bit better on the quant than you would on the GMAT for the GRE. So again, this is very rough, and you know, I'm really equalizing two different curves that aren't the same, but the rough number is like, you know, high 150s, low 160 GRE quant score is about equivalent to like a 50 percentile, 55 percentile GMAT quant, which would be, oh, good. This person is not going to have trouble here doing accounting or finance by him or herself.
I think it's important for the individual who is debating whether or not they're taking the GRE or the GMAT to talk to as many people as possible, because we're all biased towards our own selves, I think. So we all think our resumes are absolutely stellar and the best thing since sliced bread. But, you know, maybe we have some gaps there. Maybe our GRE from undergrad isn't exactly, or excuse me, our GPA from undergrad isn't exactly, you know, as strong as we thought it was. I would encourage everyone who is kind of debating on which test to take and even which schools to apply to talk to your peers who have done it, talk to us, you know, get out there and outreach as much as possible so that you can really figure out, okay, maybe there are some gaps here that I can fill with a good solid GMAT score, or, you know, maybe I really have done very well and the GRE is the course to take. And I think too, also the GRE kind of opens up, and the reason why I took the GRE is it opens up, I thought, more doors because you can use it for the dual degree program. So I was initially considering a JD MBA program, and the GRE was the test that I would take, so I didn't have to take the LSAT and the GMAT. It was just a one, you know, one test to study for instead of the two different ones for the two individual schools. So you just gotta kind of have to figure out exactly what you want to do and which doors you need opened. And I think that will kind of help determine which test to take.
Yeah, and Lindsay, so you bring up such a good point, and we're all MBAs. I neglected to talk about the LSAT and how the GRE is viewed versus the LSAT and for law school admissions. And if he's, I don't know if he could shed any light on that.
Similar things are happening. The LSAT is the law school test or was designed that way. And law schools, the top ones, including the top ones, are accepting the GRE nowadays. I think the law school acceptance of the GRE is probably a few years behind where business schools are, but it's all going in that direction. It's becoming more and more accepted, becomes more of a normalized thing. Let me just say one thing, piggybacking off of Lindsay's comment. A lot of us have imperfect information about how we compare, who we benchmark against. People with imposter syndrome, which is a lot of us, we undersell ourselves. And there's a few of us who oversell ourselves. But I do think talking to people is how you start. You want to compare yourself not to your peers at your current company or your current employer. You want to compare yourself to admits of the schools you want to go to. Compare yourself against those records and see where you stack up. Are you in the median? And just so we're clear about everything, standardized testing is not all of it. It's, you know, 20% of the application, maybe 25%, 30%. I won't name names for their privacy sake. I can't tell you how many 2.1s I know who went to Wharton, HBS, and Stanford. I can't tell you. I can't tell you how many of those people exist. There's plenty of people who would have maybe self-selected themselves out, but they have amazing qualities, amazing emotional intelligence, courage, the things that really matter. So I always say, neglect an application. You might just well get in. You just have to bet on all the horses. Give yourself a shot. Otherwise, you're rejecting yourself.
Yeah, 100%. You can't deselect yourself. To your point, for me at the Wharton Vets Club, the spread we saw on GPAs on test scores was pretty staggering. And the one common denominator was that everybody we accepted was excellent. They were just excellent in different ways. So like where someone might have had very pedestrian numbers, they were a great military leader. They were a great person who gave back to their community. And then some, you know, not to say that people had great numbers weren't, but it was really, that's what the school was measuring for. It's like, where are you excellent? And if testing was one of those areas, that was a good thumbs up there. So one thing also, Nafees, I'd like to talk about is how the run of show for the tests. So I took the GMAT and it was, I personally found the way they did the math pretty stressful, because you take it, you start off with question number one, it's kind of a 50th percentile question. You get it right, they give you a harder one. You get it wrong, they go easier. And it's just like every kind of question you get was, a feedback on how you did on the previous one. And then you were second guessing yourself to say, oh, is this one easier? Is this one harder? And so on and so forth. So I know that's how the GMAT is. How does GRE compare to that? And what are some of your, psychological, ways to cope with that type of a test, yeah, which is a computer adaptive test?
Mimosa.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. A flask. Yeah. A flask in your back
pocket. Gosh. Listen, the people who write standardized tests, they may be math geniuses, they may be verbal geniuses, but in reality, their job title is psychometrician. They measure psychology. That's literally their job title. The GMAT is an adaptive test, and they use something called item response theory, which is a huge field to try to figure out in 1 hour what is someone's quant aptitude or one's verbal aptitude. It's which might be some predictor of future GPA. The GMAT and the GRE, to varying degrees, do have high correlations that the schools find tenable. The GMAT is a bit more complicated with their algorithm. It's not as easy as get one right, then the next question is necessarily harder. It's a bit of a moving average kind of deal. And to really complicate things is they have experimental questions throughout that hour, which don't count. They're just running experiments to see how difficult this question is, because, you know, anyone can write a question, but you don't really know whether it's easy, medium, or hard until you have thousands of people take it. So throughout the GMAT, there are, they won't admit to this, but I have it on pretty good authority that there's up to 9 experimental questions throughout the GMAT. They don't count. So it is a test of psychology, because someone might be psyching him or herself out on a question that doesn't count at all. And thinking, oh man, I'm blowing this question. I'm getting it wrong. I need to double down on this next question. You know, all this is based off really nothing, just our own weaknesses, our own self-doubts. On an adaptive test like the GMAT, the best thing you can do, and it's easier said than done, is to have a goldfish memory. It's like, next question, have a very quick response time on the next question. Just keep forgetting the last one, and then have this as like a test where you take 67 shots, you're going to miss about 20% of them, and keep moving on with your life. That GMAT is really, really difficult, because perfection, even perfect scores, aren't perfect tests, and that's hard for people to really understand. The GRE is also adaptive, but it's not question by question, it's section adaptive. So you'll have a quant section, let's say a 35 minute quant section where you do 20 questions. And how you do on that section will dictate the difficulty level of the next quant section you get. And you do want to get into the highest quant section, because if you don't get to the highest quant section, they will basically give a haircut to your overall score. So it's basically a section adaptation, which isn't as scary for a lot of people. One thing is for certain, both tests are changing soon. The GMAT is going to change in Q4, probably October of this year. And the GRE is also changing. They're both getting shorter. I think the GRE algorithm is going to be very similar. It's a shorter test. But the GMAT has changed a little bit. They're going to allow you to, after, let's say, the quant section or the verbal section, to go back and amend up to three questions should you choose. So you can flag some questions for later, and then you can go back and change three. So, you know, how students react to that, I don't know. It might cause a lot more second guessing. I think it's a pro student move at the moment, but there's going to be some coaching involved in how to deal with that. Overall, it's the more you think about it, the more complicated it is. So I always advise my students, it doesn't matter how you think you're scoring. Your job is to get the next question right. So try do your best on the next question. Price in 20 or 30% is going to be wrong no matter what, because it's an adaptive test, and move on to the next one. They will give you a score at the end. You know, that's the best attitude, is just try to keep it even keel.
And then one thing that's so wonderful about Smart with a Heart and Sherpa Prep is they teach you how to take this test. So they walk you through all of this like psychological stress that you're going to be under taking the test, but they're also going to teach you how, like, what each question actually means. You know, like, what are they actually looking for in this question? It might not actually just be a straight geometry question. You know, there's underlying things that the test takers are looking for you to answer correctly. And that's one thing I think that kind of Nafis was just talking a little bit about. And it's one thing that the company does so, so well, that in the first initial test prep service that I was using did not do that for me. They did not teach me how to take this test. And I think that that's a huge component of success in like the GRE, GMAT test taking world.
Yeah, Lindsay. So Lindsay, to your point, this is like one of the best things Nafis taught me was the 3 minutes and punt roll. Like if I was getting wrapped up on a question, just make an educated guess and move on, because I was going to be shooting myself in the foot down the line if I didn't. So yeah. About that test taking strategy, exactly right.
And there's certain questions, if it's worded a certain way, you should, if you have to guess, always guess, you know, B instead of C. And they teach you those little things, and it helps, especially when you're under that pressure and that stress.
Game within the game.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, and actually, this is a good question. So, Nafis, I didn't get that much about your background in the earlier part of the interview, but what made you decide that you loved test prep? Like, how did you get into this field?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. No, I never thought that I would be running a test prep company or a test prep nonprofit. That's not what I thought I would do. So I went to undergrad, and I thought, honestly, at that time, this is late 90s, I thought I'd be a banker or maybe a corporate lawyer. The corporate lawyer thing ended about 6 months in, because I took an internship, like, I don't want to do this. So I always thought I'd be in some kind of finance, something, whether it's in New York or something else, I didn't know. I graduated from undergrad and went to a bunch of different grad school things. But I was always doing like something finance related. I had some entrepreneurial ideas that I was running through. But I didn't really get into test prep, till I was 28. My sister, who was at Hopkins at the time, Johns Hopkins, she was doing a master's in public health. And like most Hopkins students, she was a tutor on the side. And she just suggested, I forgot exactly, but I think she was late for a flight from somewhere. And she asked me whether I wanted to teach her SAT class. And again, you know, I've always been good at standardized testing, but I never really thought it was a job I didn't know it, I didn't even consider it. But just on a lark, I just tutored some kids, taught a class. I thought it was a lot of fun, especially compared to my day job. This is 2008, if you remember the financial crisis. It was our company did fine, but it was pretty stressful. This is just a lot of fun, like teaching some kids some geometry, teaching them how to read. Like, that was kind of fun. But the fun started evolving into something else when I started looking at the materials that other people have. And I'm like, I'm not using this. I'm not going to teach this stuff. This is nonsense. The stuff I'm making up is better than this. And then, conversation after conversation, I met up with Jay, and that, you know, 17 years later, this is what I'm doing. The joy is really in the interactions. The joy is really having, you know, those LinkedIn updates 5 years after, 10 years after. Like, you know, a couple of my former students or professors. And when I met them, they couldn't make change. Like, they could, like, honestly, I'm not kidding. They couldn't make change. And they're professors of statistics. It's like, what happened? How'd that happen? And, you know, then beyond that, like the more practical things, you know, they're transitioning out of the military. They're not, you know, they can't afford a mortgage. They got two kids. They're like, oh man, I got to get a job. I got to provide for them. And they are able to do it. You know, 5 years later, 3 years later, they get that job. It's like, oh man, they're fine. They're totally fine. They're making really good money at a reputable company. That's what you get out of it. Like, to be perfectly frank, it's not like geometry and reading comprehension is that interesting to me. It never has been. I was always skeptical. Like, testing is always easy for me because I was just skeptical. I was suspicious. There's no way this is hard. Like, even from, I took the SATs when I was 12 because the school kind of asked. Like, so I never really thought anything of it. Like, this is just got to be a nonsense test. There's no way it's actually hard. You're going to give me 20 minutes to answer 15 questions. They can't be hard questions. There's got to be something up, you know? So I had a suspicious mind, I guess. And, you know, I was always looking for the shortcut because I knew it had to exist. And so I found these shortcuts. Jay and I have been honing these shortcuts, gosh, 6 days a week for nearly two decades. But the thing that keeps me going isn't the content of the materials. Please, it's not the content. It's really like those interventions, which are hard, you know, helping someone get through the pain of stagnant tests or bombing an exam. And like, you kind of live with it, you know, you like, you know, I have a bad day too, and something like that happens. But, you know, in the big picture, you know, you just shake yourself off and take it again in 3 weeks, you know, but it's really the stories. It's these collection of stories that we have with individuals that make all the difference. That's what keeps us going. Believe me, like, I don't think finding X is that interesting either, but you know what, if you can't find X on a linear equation, you ain't going to be able to price your product properly. You're not going to be able to forecast how many employees you'll need. And you know, there are business relation things that you need to learn how to do. And the GRE and the GMAT are just a small proxy for that kind of stuff, just to make sure they have a conversation. So I do think that helping people start thinking about numbers differently, start reading differently, there is a joy there. But bigger, man, it's really about the stories afterwards, the 5 years out, 10 years out, what they're doing. At this point, 15 years out, what they're doing is really interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's crazy. I mean, like, you talk about it all coming full circle. Lindsay, Nick, and I, at one point, were all kind of wide-eyed, you know, people just walking into a test prep center, trying to figure out our next move, daunted by this test. And luckily, we all got to meet Nafees, and you know, and the rest is history. And it's, yeah, for me, it's just incredible to hear how many people have had their lives transformed through your service. And I'm very transparent. I would not have gotten into Wharton had it not been for the support I got at Sherpa Prep. And, you know, the sentiment has been universal amongst everybody I've talked to. So Nafees, just thank you so much for all you're doing and all you continue to do for us. And, you know, I think the results for themselves.
Thank you. But thank Lindsay and Nick. This is their show. They're taking time out of their time. They're taking time out of the day. They're going to school. They're still doing this for us. So, and for you. So for all the thousands of military people, transitioners out there. So thanks. Thank you, everyone. I'm just really heartwarmed to be part of this.
Cool. Absolutely. All right. So I think we're kind of running up on time here. So I will turn it over to the guests to see if they have any parting words, for our listeners.
I just want to say thank you to like Alec and the Service to School team for allowing us to just come on here and talk a little bit about GRE prep and GMAT prep. I know it's like a conversation that no one ever really wants to have. It can be kind of daunting, a little bit boring, but hopefully, you know, the listeners out there can get something out of this. And, you know, hop on the website, look up Smart with a Heart, because it's a service that is going to actually be very transformative. And who knows, maybe in 5 years, you'll be sitting in the same seat that Nick and I are sitting, working hand in hand with Nafees, and hopefully just being able to get more people to take this test and, you know, live out their business school, law school, all these different like higher education dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. Echo Lindsay, like, shout out to Service to School, also played a huge part in my transition that I didn't mention. Like, Nafees handled the test prep, Service to School paired me with someone who had done it before. it was like the perfect combination. I think the two go hand in hand really well. So I'm like super pumped about the partnership that we have. And yeah, thank you for having us on.
That's all we have for this episode. Join us next week, same time, same place, where we share more Service to School stories. Service to School Stories is hosted by Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer, and Alec Emmert, Service to School CEO. Our podcast is produced and edited by our Director of Communication, Amanda Tobias. Service to School is a 501c3 nonprofit providing free college admission support to transitioning service members and veterans. Join us next week and follow us for more on your favorite social media platforms.